Tuesday, November 24th, and you're tuned in to this week's episode of Argus News Radio. News, culture, and life at Wesleyan University and beyond. Argus News Radio is a product of WESU-FM in Middletown and Wesleyan student newspaper, The Argus. I'm your host, Andrea Dominic. Hey, thanks so much for tuning in. And as always, let's kick off the show with a look at some of the past week's headlines. Last Friday, November 13th, saw an unfortunate occurrence of violence on campus. Sophomore Kumail Akbar was walking by President Michael Roth's house on his way home from 250 Court Street to 200 Church. It was about 11:50 p.m. on a Friday night when he was struck on the head with a can of spray paint. According to Akbar, he was walking by the president's home when he noticed two suspicious men who didn't look like students walking to the president's house. One of them was described as white and holding what turned out to be the spray can, and the other was tall and dark-skinned. Akbar said, "They rushed over to the president's residence. The taller guy stayed outside while the other one crept up to his front door. They were planning to wreck the door or spray graffiti on it or something." At this time, Akbar said he took out his phone to call his friends while continuing to walk, and then he heard the taller man call off the operation and thought he had inadvertently saved the president's door. The assailant, he said, then came up from behind and struck him on the head with the spray can. By the time Akbar got up from the ground, the men had jumped into a rundown white sedan, which was occupied by several other people. Akbar said the men were laughing as the car sped away. As his phone was wrecked from the fall, Akbar walked to 200 Church, where a friend called public safety. Akbar was then taken to Middlesex Hospital, where he received 5 staples for his head wound. Though fortunately his injuries were minimal, Akbar says he was unhappy with the way he was treated by public safety that night. He alleges that when his friend called public safety, the officer who picked up immediately began asking for descriptions of the assailants without first inquiring about his medical condition. Akbar has since sent an email to President Roth, Vice President of Student Affairs Michael Whaley, and other administrators detailing the problems that he had with public safety's handling of the situation. Public Safety is currently conducting an internal investigation of Akbar's allegations, and Director of Public Safety David Meyer said that he has no further comment until it concludes later this week. As always, the Argus will keep you posted on the university's findings. With a $5 million budget gap looming in the distance, the Wesleyan Student Assembly, or WSA, recently surveyed the student body to determine which departments and programs should face budget cuts. Among the 472 students who participated in the WSA survey, a sweeping majority voted that financial aid should be protected from budget cuts. Academic departments were another area that most students did not want to see affected. The majority of respondents were open to the possibility of budget cuts in athletics and the undergraduate tuition scholarship program for dependent children of faculty, professional librarians, and administrative staff. Participants were split on the remainder of the issues, including budget cuts for the Green Street Arts Center, our own WESU radio station, and other co-curriculars, as well as potential faculty salary freeze and moving professors to a 3-to-2 ratio teaching load. The Board of Trustees met on campus last weekend to discuss their course of action between now and May, when the final budget for the 2010-2011 academic year will be approved. According to President Michael Roth, the administration places significant weight on the recommendations of the WSA. And now back to some local Middletown news. And unfortunately, it seems that unemployment is still on the rise. Although the national unemployment rate grew to 9.8% in September, Middletown's unemployment rate has remained below the national average at 7.5%, according to the city's statistics report. The biggest problem currently facing Middletown employees, according to the report, is a potential pullback in hiring in response to the economic downturn. Although students make up less than 18% of the city's population of 48,000, Deputy Director of Planning, Conservation, and Development for Middletown, McKeel Wackers, reported that the university is Middletown's 5th largest employer. Wackers has acknowledged that the current economic climate has lowered the rate of hiring across the board. He said that the city has run a variety of programs to stimulate job creation and investment, such as job fairs. And that wraps it up for the headlines. Next up, it's our weekly Senior Thesis Spotlight with ANR senior contributor Ezra Silk.
Hi, this is Ezra Silk, and I'm here with Daniel Charnas. He's a senior who's writing his thesis about Beatlemania. Daniel, can you tell us a little bit about why you chose this topic?
This was a topic that's always interested me since I suppose I was a fan of the music of the Beatles long before, but the history of the Beatles and the history of this movement really has interested me in the past few years. So I'm really happy to be exploring it.
And you said there's actually not that much written about Beatlemania historically.
Well, there's a ton written about it. There's a ton written about it, but not really in, not really from a very scholarly perspective. So there's some scholarly material. There's not very much historical material. There's very little written by actual historians. So I thought that there was a not a large gap to fill, but a very concrete one. So
why the Beatles? Why did this hysteria happen? Why not Jerry and the Pacemakers?
Well, it's obviously it's one of those very, very – if we could answer that question in a way that is well, if we could give a solid answer to that question, it would be record companies' dreams. I mean, why
right.
Why does one artist succeed over another? Mm-hmm. But one thing I'm looking at in terms of the Beatles is their timing and the generation that they appealed to. So you have this this new post-war generation called the baby boomers who sort of peaked between 1948 and 1952, and they come of age – or they begin to come of age just when the Beatles are arriving. And I think that that's something that needs to be explored in a purely historical context. So why does a generation arriving just when the Beatles are arriving have the reaction that they have?
Right. So you have the problem of how much do you factor in how good their music is in assessing why they became so famous and important?
Yeah, the music, to deal with the music in my case, it's been a struggle to decide, well, how can you incorporate what were considered their hits? How do you decide whether it was just the music that set off this buzz? Personally, I don't think it was. The two songs that were their hits in Britain in America, respectively, were Please Please Me and I Want to Hold Your Hand. And I'm not going to go into what made those great songs or why they were great songs. The people producing them knew they were. George Martin, as soon as they finished recording Please Please Me, he said to them very straightforwardly, you have just made your first number one. He knew it was a great song. So did they. But I don't think that a song like that or a song like I Want to Hold Your Hand is what's going to generate the mania that lines the streets, that brings thousands to the airports to greet them. I don't think that's what does it alone, because there are plenty of great bands writing great music. They don't generate the kind of buzz that the Beatles did.
What's the conventional years that Beatlemania is placed in?
I think people tend to place it from the time that the word Beatlemania was first used, which was the end of 1963, and that was in Britain, just in Britain. Mm-hmm. And then they started touring internationally in the end of 1963, beginning in 1964 when they arrived in America. So 64, 65, and then 66, people say it's waning. Mostly I would say it waned a bit in America because of the John Lennon Jesus Christ controversy when he said the Beatles were more popular than Jesus Christ. There was a bit of a backlash. Yeah. But I think the popularity was still there, and they stopped touring in 1966. So
right. Is that perception also come out of the fact that the Beatles' audience was seen as sort of young teenage girls, and then they started making this drug music around 1966?
I don't think that has anything to do with the end of Beatlemania, you know, because the music that they say had been influenced by drugs, they were actually still performing that music, you know. I don't want to point to songs in particular, but you know, the songs that were on Rubber Soul, they were performing some of those, and the later ones on Help, the song Nowhere Man, they had smoked pot before they wrote that. Yet they were still performing that stuff. So, and it was hugely
right.
popular. So, right. I don't think the drugs really necessarily dictated who the fans were in it.
So, when does Beatlemania end for you?
Well, for me, I'm exploring this idea that Beatlemania was sort of carried away in a bit of a mythical form even after 1966 and even after they went their separate ways in 1970. I think Beatlemania was sort of – it was kept alive in this mythical notion that the Beatles could again go on tour or could play a concert. And people clung to that idea so much so that if you look at Beatle fan magazines, Beatle newsletters, you notice that people are these magazines would publish stories saying that the Beatles are going to reunite, they're going to reunite. These are based on virtually nothing. And when John Lennon's killed in 1980, that is the end of the era of the Beatle myth. They can no longer tour, they're dead. All of them, really, in that sense. Right. So
you must have some interesting sources to look at. I know you've been taking a glance at the Beatles fan mail. Do you think you could read us a few of the most interesting letters?
Yeah. The fan mail's been – I was lucky enough to have this book that was compiled by Bill Harry in 1964 of letters that fans wrote the Beatles. And some of them have been pretty useful to me in sort of telling me how fans related to the Beatles, particularly younger fans versus older fans. There's one here from Shirley in Louisville, Kentucky, who wrote, "Dear Paul, I think you are very sexy, and I don't even know what that means." Or another one from Karen in Seattle, Washington, which is, this is to John Lennon. "My darling John, I want to make this letter very short because there are tears in my eyes. I could never love or marry anyone else. No other arms will ever hold me. No other lips will ever kiss me. Because to me, you are a Greek god. You are the ninth wonder of the world." Now, some people have asked me whether it's a bad thing that I'm spending my senior year of college reading 15-year-old's fan letters to the Beatles. I don't think it is.
No. What do you find useful about those?
I think many scholars have sort of questioned why or how girls were turned on by the Beatles. People have mentioned the sexual revolution of the 1940s, 50s, 60s in relationship. But I don't think that has anything to do with it, really. I think it has more to do with the fact that there are girls who were born in 1948, 1952, who are becoming teenagers just when the Beatles arrive on the scene. And these are just expressions of innocent, not even sexuality, just romance. And it's just an innocent exploration of it. That's all it is. And so these letters are very helpful in that sense.
All right. Well, thanks so much, and good luck with your thesis.
Thank you very much, Rose.
And rounding out this week's edition of Argus News Radio, we have an all-new segment. It's called Scientific Banter Essentials. Our good pals over from WESU's own Scientific Banter are gracing Argus News Radio this week with the latest in cutting-edge science headlines, both real and imaginary. Be sure to check out the full live show of Scientific Banter every Wednesday from 11 p.m. till midnight, right here on WESU. It's hosted by DJ Disingenuous and MC Hall. Every week, they debate and discuss the latest scientific innovations, both real and imagined, that affect our world today. Here's DJ Disingenuous with a little Scientific Banter Essentials right here on Argus News Radio.
Thanks, Andrea. The Pope ruled Sunday in a public homily that Vatican City, in the wake of the USA and USSR, would invest in its own space program. When asked whether his change of stance on space travel would carry over to Vatican City's robot policy, the Pope expressed ambivalence. Cardinal Husfeldt, a press representative for Benedict XVI, said that the Vatican still considers robots a threat to transubstantiation, but are considering renegotiating the robot embargo that has plagued the Roman Catholic Empire for decades. The Vatican still, however, condemns the installation in many American churches of automatic reconciliation devices, or ARDs, calling it a gross infringement on a Vatican robot policy. Since U.S. scientists discovered sublunar water holdings last month, a new space race has begun amongst smaller countries and private corporations in an effort to secure moon space for utopian colonies and other devious efforts. Some groups that have expressed interest in the new space race include Google, Canada, Washington Mutual, Trinidad and Tobago, Hillary Clinton, Brazilian metal band Sepultura, White Castle, National Geographic, the Republic of Korea, the Women's Christian Temperance Union, and Lions Club International. New technologies are being developed daily to make space exploration a reality on the consumer level. Biomimetic researchers consider themselves on the brink of major breakthroughs in spiralized anterior fin technologies for hybrid motor vehicles that will put vertical transportation back on a par with horizontal movement. Fed up with fashion? Scientists in Melbourne have announced that they have developed a program that can predict next season's fashion trends through a combination of computerized stochastics and a four-dimensional visualization of the French-American Idiocy Index. In anticipation of the spring fashion season, the Australians would only divulge one tip. Don't throw out your Crocs yet, America. They'll be even cooler next year. Back to you, Andrea.
Holy cow, science is crazy these days, huh? Well, anyway, that wraps it up for the November 24th episode of Argus News Radio. It being November 24th, I'd like to give a little birthday shout-out to my mom. She's at home in California. Happy birthday, Mom. I love you. But of course, my mom or anyone wouldn't even hear this show if it weren't for the hard work of producers Sam Bernhardt and Mary Longley, senior contributor Ezra Silk, and DJ Disingenuous. We wish you all a lovely Thanksgiving week. Better head to the market now. You don't want to be that guy who gets gypped out of cranberry sauce, do you? But on a more serious note, around Thanksgiving, I always like to remember this quote by William Faulkner. He said, "Gratitude is a quality similar to electricity. It must be produced and discharged and used up in order to exist at all." Happy Thanksgiving. For Argus News Radio, I'm Andrea Dominic.